and welcome to Rewatchable, episode number 275. In this episode, we're going to be covering Sense8, episode 105, Art is Like Religion. With myself today, I have two newbies and a superfan. I am the other superfan. And we wanted to make sure you knew how to get a hold of us before we got started. In order to email us, you could reach us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @re_watchable. And our Tumblr account is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. We're going to get us started today to get you familiar with our voices with some fun facts. And I'm going to choose you, Mai, today. What is your fun fact about yourself as a super fan for Sense8?
I'm just going to go with the weather, actually, because my fun fact is that it's finally raining. And in case you didn't know, Europe has been going up in flames lately, so rain is good.
I did not know it was going up in flames, but Colorado also is, so I guess the world is just burning.
Yeah, we had a blessed breeze the other day, and all I could smell was like the scent of forest fires coming from Sweden.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's not been good, not gonna lie.
Well, please stay safe during all that, because that sounds insane. Yeah. And I sincerely hope that the rain quells the fires and they're gone by tomorrow. That would
been
be nice.
So good.
And then we also have newbie Caitlin on with us here today. Caitlin, what's your fun fact?
My fun fact was a really cute moment I had with my ESL job that I've been doing. And all these kids are, you know, 5, 10 years old, and they're in China. And this one kid I was working with, he was so proud to show me that he was wearing a Captain America t-shirt and even had a cap shield. This kid is like 5 years old and he's Chinese, and it was adorable. And he was so proud of it. And I about melted.
That is precious. We should have him as a guest. Rewatchable, so he'd talk about his Stucky love with us.
Mitchie's 5.
Never mind. All right, and then Adiana, you are our last newbie for today's podcast. What's your fun fact?
I'm going to make mine about the weather and say that it's very hot, as I'm sure it is for most of you, since everything is burning up. Yeah.
Yeah, the world is just going to be one giant crisp at the end of this podcast. So I hope everyone enjoys it while we still have some amount of water around us, right?
You could come to Georgia. It's been raining for like 4 days.
Believe in climate change. Please.
Yeah. It's rough out there. Everyone, please stay hydrated once again while you still can. That sounds so pessimistic. I mean for it to be more of a joke, I promise, but maybe not. And then for myself, if I had to scrounge up a fun fact from my life, it would be that before this podcast, I had slept for about like 4 hours because I'd flown in from New York yesterday. So I'm a little bit loopy, but we're all going to work through this because I love the show so much. And it was very fun trying to watch the show in my parents' house when they were all asleep, hopefully, because I was just hoping no one would walk in, especially on this episode, especially in the end. I was like, oh my God, please, this would be so mortifying. I got away with it. No one witnessed me watching Sense8. I warned them all in advance. I was like, Sense8 is a very graphic show in terms of everything. So like, understand that you may think I'm watching something else that I'm not. I'm not watching just porn on the TV today. I promise. It's really just a sex scene in the TV show. It's a little bit of a struggle.
Sometimes it's hard to tell.
I mean, yeah. Even for me, knowing the show, I'm like, oh, wait. Oh, this is a lot. Here goes Wolf King again. Yeah. All right, so we're going to go into our show synopsis. This doc was written by our wonderful Adiana this week, and she wrote, in this episode, Leto shoots a movie while Kafius gets drawn into a gang war, and when Wolfgang shows up naked to her wedding, Kala faints. Same. Well, this episode, I feel, has a lot of build-up to that final moment, and you know we're all going to be dying to talk about it because it's a pretty big thing to see male genitalia on TV. I can't think of any moments that it's happened in my life. So we definitely want to get there and have our full conversation toward the end of the episode. But I want to get started off by talking about the title drop and the bad guy in Leto's movie says the quote, "Art is like religion. For the believers, it's everything. For anyone else, it's just a pile of stinking bullshit." So we have that going on as our theme in this episode. Does anyone feel particularly strong about this? Perhaps you may feel about this very strongly, Mai, since you're the one that added that part to the doc.
Actually, I just really liked it, the quote.
Yeah.
As a semi non-believer, I guess.
Right. Like, as art can be your religion, it doesn't have to be anything more than that. It can just be human beings on Earth.
Yeah, just, you know, nice concept, good to look at.
Right, right. Yeah, I think it presents a interesting belief system for a bunch of people who are reading each other's minds and visiting each other telepathically.
Considering Carla's situation with who she's marrying into and the situation with the temple.
Yes.
Striking a nerve, maybe.
Right, and I think that this episode is called Art as Religion to a certain point for Kala's wedding because this is a religious event, and there was a lot of discussion leading up to it about how they were going to mesh the two religions, and also we have the underlying storyline in Kala's plot that we have the Kala's father-in-law wants to end prayer toward Ganesh, and is public enemy number one to those people that were praying that day. And we're going to see how that evolves, I'm sure. But in the meantime, we have this theme also running into, I suppose, a bit of Leto's life. And not just from the quote from the movie he's in, but also from the fact that he has to handle a lot going in. And he's probably hoping to find some kind of hope and salvation in his day because he seems like he's having it very rough because I'm going to say this much. I feel like women are superheroes in the fact that they can have periods and live lives and do things seems amazing to me because I'm just not a very good person at handling my emotions, much like Leto. I don't think I can really like have a day where I was productive if I had the same emotional differences going on in my day and the physical pains going on because Leto is feeling Sun's pains and emotions while she's on her period. And sure, she has, you know, her moments when she's training and she's crying because I don't know. That's not for me to define because I do not know how this feels, but I'm assuming either emotional or physical pain. And she doesn't want to deal with Leto, but he is just being a pest. He keeps showing up. He's crying. He's getting in her way. And he's screaming during his whole car accident sequence. That's not fun for anyone involved. It was a bit comical, sure, but our Leto definitely loses his edge in the moments when he shouldn't. And I wish for Sun's poor sake, he would have given her a break. Ariana, how are you feeling when you saw Leto going kind of wild in this episode about having these period pains?
Was that about her period? I mean, that just like flew over my head. I thought it was just because she was upset.
Well, do you remember he was saying like his stomach felt so sick and he felt like he had like cancer and he was feeling extreme pain? That was meant to be him saying like he feels Sun's period cramps.
Yeah, but I didn't think that like his emotional breakdown was because he was on his period.
I'll give you that much. He's a very emotional person as is, so you could be right.
Like I thought he was, she's upset not because she's on her period, but because she thinks she has to go to jail. Or was I wrong?
No, I think you're absolutely right in that too. It's the most I can say is no comment and anything in that conversation there, but I think you are seeing the plot for how it is right there. And also it's tough because what would you do if you had a man screaming in your head while you also had to make this tough decision in your life? I don't know how I would react. I feel like I'd be more upset than these characters are even. I'd be worse off. And then also when we have Kafius visiting Sun in a little bit, he has a lot of sweet moments with characters whenever he meets them. And I particularly really like this meeting with Sun. I find that the location is very beautiful. And I love that the steps leading down to the water feel like very symbolic of the tough decision Sun has to make, because she has to step down and into her maker. She has to step down into a new life in a way, and deciding whether or not she wants to go to prison for her father and son and brother, and therefore the business. But Kafius just seems to really be excited to be in Seoul because he likes everyone. And it seems like, Caitlin, you really like Kafius so far. So what did you think of this interaction?
I mean, I really liked the one with Riley earlier in the episode when he's like so excited and he drinks the tea. Like, it's just, he thinks it's so amazing. I just think he's precious and he's a cinnamon roll that, as Mai tweeted me, we must protect at all costs because he's adorable and I love him. I find him the most likable of all the characters.
Yeah, and his struggle is pretty relatable too. Even if it's an extreme degree to my life, but to see him going through a lot of trials and tribulations to try and save his mother and to make sure she's provided for, that makes you feel like, okay, I can get behind that because I would go to any length for my family members as well.
He's the boy who loves his mama. Like, he's just precious. He's the most adorable, and I don't want anyone to tell me that that's going to change because he's adorable.
I have to say no comment. Mai, how are you feeling about Kafius?
I find his enthusiasm incredibly infectious, for one, and he seems to reach the other characters like so gently and like giving them, I don't want to say hope, but also like hope, because he's so pure and oh yeah, I love him.
At this point in the show, newbies, are you starting to ship any of our sensates together? Are you seeing any relationships forming? Especially with these random meetups that are happening, are you seeing like seeds that they're trying to plant, or do you think that that's not healthy and they're not going to, and they know that that's, I mean, wasn't our whole episode last week, we were going to name it, is it incest or masturbation? So I guess that's the question here. Are any of these characters giving each other the eye in this episode? How do you feel about this, Adiana?
I mean, I think if they're trying to make it, I think at least pretty obvious that the German guy and Kala are like a thing. He interrupted her wedding
with his dick. Yeah, he definitely did.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, I suppose that could be interpreted somehow as being weirdly romantically charged. I don't know. It's a lot. Listen, I'm still reeling from it years later. I feel like every time I see it, it's still a shocking event. But regardless, I understand your context there, Adiana. How are you feeling about any of the relationships at this point when you're watching the show, Caitlin?
I mean, I don't particularly like Wolfgang in any way, shape, or form, so I still don't find him much of a character. So I just find that whole thing with Kala very odd, and I just kind of rolled my eyes at it. But I don't know. I'm not invested in a lot of, like, probably half the characters yet, so it's asking me to care in places I don't quite care yet.
Well, who do you love then? Who do you care about?
Besides Kafius.
I like Kafius and I like Leto. And I guess I like Kala. That's about it.
So what in particular draws you to Leto's personality? We know Kafius, but I'm curious about Leto because we see him in a very emotional state in this episode. Did you relate to anything he was going through here, or did you find him just kind of funny?
I mean, for one thing, he actually has a personality. So that's different than some of the characters. And I find him very endearing because he's trying to act in a lot of ways, not just in his job. And he's very adorable. Oh, I like Nomi too. I'll say that. I like Nomi too.
I definitely love Nomi, and I'm really excited to talk about our love of Nomi. But I have to ask, how do you feel about the state of the threesome then, if you like Leto?
I mean, that's apparently a thing they're hinting at.
So, the reason I'm asking is you brought up something that made me think, which is great. I love when newbies can come up with stuff to make me rethink my favorite shows. But you were saying that he's doing a lot of acting, and I can't help but wonder at what point he's acting for Hernando's sake. Where is he trying to make this threesome work to make his boyfriend happy? And if he is or isn't, I don't know. It's this whole thing is a very large spectrum, especially since we have all these sensates jumping around and talking to each other all the time. So it's hard to find anything really grounded for me when I'm watching this show. But I never really fully understood all of what Leto's motivations were in allowing the threesome to go on and allowing for Danny to live with him. Did you feel like you gained any insight recently, Mai, on where Leto is at this stage in the show?
I think the most insight into the whole threesome situation comes during the vows, because the vow about companionship is when they flash to the three of them on the couch. And I feel like that gives more, I don't know, weight to the whole thing, if that makes sense.
How do you mean it gives it more weight? Do you think the word companionship is the key word there?
Yeah, like it's not just superficial. Like, they're not just letting her hang out in the house because she wants to.
Well, Hernando really seemed to be appreciating Danny when she was complimenting his cooking, and Leto was very dismissive of it.
Yeah.
So I feel like in some ways, Hernando almost likes Danny more than Leto does.
Well, he did exactly choose her.
I like this one. Yeah, he did. And he's like, I wasn't wrong. I know. I knew I liked her. I knew she was different. So it does feel like a bit more of Hernando's choice than it does Leto's. But I guess we're going to have to see how that evolves, because I'm sure we'll see more of their relationship. And we will get to talking about our love of Nomi soon, Caitlin. I'm really eager, because Nomi is my favorite character, actually. So I'm happy to share love anytime of her. So then we get a little bit into the investigation of what's going on with Nomi from Will's side. He is calling Nomi's mom, and Nomi's mom, again, is doing the same thing she was doing at the hospital, calling her Michael and saying he. And Will just gets to the point where he says her name is Nomi and then hangs up the phone. Doesn't really get any information from the situation. He just understands that she's missing, and it's just to get him in the episode, it really feels like. So Adriana writes in the doc that this is a white savior complex situation because he has...
That's not what I was talking about.
Oh, okay.
Not in regards to this.
Right.
She's also white, so...
Okay, good. Well, I was getting confused because I didn't understand why Will would be not loved because he is also one of my faves. And I was like,
oh,
no.
I find... His entire plot line in general just really frustrates me, but
preach, girl.
It's fine. It's not, it doesn't have anything to do with Nomi. She's fine. Okay.
So then you're saying then this is the way that Nomi's mother treats Nomi. This is the white saber complex.
Oh, it has nothing. It has literally nothing to do with it. I find it really problematic, him and the whole gang wars storyline. I don't care. He's being fine to Nomi.
Oh, okay.
I don't care what he does with her. That's fine. He's being helpful. I mean, that there's probably its own issues there with, like, cis male, but we're talking about Nomi now. I have no issues with her.
Sure, yeah. And I think part of what's tough for me watching this scenario is that I can only get so angry at Nomi's mother before I start to feel bad for her. And I hate feeling bad for horrible people because it doesn't solve anything. It still makes me feel like I'm losing because I'm feeling like I need to help them when I don't. And that's how I would feel talking to this horrible person. I don't know. Maybe that's just the type of person I am. I find it all very disturbing to a dangerous level because it starts to feel very life-threatening immediately when medical procedures are happening simply because Nomi is trans. That is the mother's whole motivation here. She says it all started when he started taking those hormones. And that's bullshit, and it's totally obnoxious, but it's probably not far off from how other trans people might feel during transition, that, you know, others are going to judge them for the chemicals they're putting into their body, as it might be stated, or anything to the fact of, well, you're not in control of your medical state anymore because you're not yourself, which is once again bullshit. It's very upsetting, and no one can touch my Nomi. Please, everyone leave your beautiful brain alone. It's going to stay in her head, and that's the way it's going to be. Just stop trying to lobotomize her. Does anyone else have any strong feelings about this whole plot with Nomi's mom calling her Michael and all that? Maya, you sounded like you were sighing.
Yeah, I just get really, really angry. I don't feel bad for her at all. You're clearly a better person than I am. I just want to punch her. So, yeah. Don't want to help, just want to punch.
Fair enough. She's not someone that we really need to feel any sympathy for here. She's not helping the scenario. She's making it worse. So that's that. And Adriana, if you ever care to enlighten us on anything more that goes on with Will's plots and him doing anything with Gang Wars that was tone deaf, I love to hear you preach. So I'll give the floor to you if you need to say anything more here before we move on from Will.
No, I mean, I'm tired. I don't want to.
I understand.
No, I don't want to.
There's a strength in admitting that too.
No, I don't know. I'm tired of it. I don't know. I'm just tired. I don't want to do it. I don't want to have to do this. I'm tired of it. Let's just move on.
Totally get that. And I also wanted to talk then about how Kafius is interacting with Riley really quickly, because he seems to be the cinnamon roll that we all really appreciate. As far as I understand, I think all of us really like him on this podcast. So that's like a very universally agreed thing. I haven't heard anyone say anything. Speak now or forever hold your peace. Please, because I love him too, and I'm happy that we can all share love of a character that I consider to be very pure and very wonderful. And his interactions with the senseis continue to be amazing when he has to try Riley's London tea. And oh my god, he can taste it, and it feels great to feel like you're feeling it with him. It's so weird that the show has this effect on me. Caitlin, do you feel this way when you're watching the show, that their acting is making you feel like you're almost like tasting or feeling or smelling something along with them?
No. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Think about the way he describes the tea and how it's like, wow, this is like the most amazing thing ever. And he's smelling it and he can look around the room and feel like he's there. It's about the acting, I think. That's what gets me there. Maya, do you feel anything about that?
Not the same way that you do, but I just like he's so pure and enjoying the moment. Like he's not worried at all. He's not like the others, like sudden being all, I prefer to think of you as a hallucination. Please go now. He's just hanging out, living in the moment.
He doesn't freak out when he ends up like in across the world. He's just like, cool.
Ah, I'm in London.
Like, it's cold here. Cool. cool. I like it. It's just precious.
Like, this is new. Awesome.
It's very much going back to when he keeps telling his mom, I think today's going to be a good day. He just seems to be such an eternally optimistic person that he is always looking for the positives in everything that's happening to him. And it's just, it's so different from what we see on television now that's so dark and gritty and angry and cynical. And he is just the complete opposite of all.
Yeah, I get happy watching him.
Well, it's funny when you said that he's the opposite of like the dark and cynical plots of most TV shows. He has such a dark story going on here with this this gang life, this war going on, it seems, between gangs that he's getting sucked into. So it's funny how during all of this turmoil, during his mother being so sick, of course, even that in particular, he's able to stay such like a positive little being. And I think that for me is what sells his character as being like so amazing, because it shows resilience in really tough times. I can only hope to one day be as wonderful as Kafius personally, because I feel like I would crack like an egg underneath the pressure he's in, having to do this whole backpack thing and then learning it's just coconuts. He doesn't really seem to really care as much because he gets the drugs in the end, but he's definitely being toyed with, and that's upsetting because people are going to start, it seems, hire him as some sort of hitman or something to that effect because of Sun's ability to come and do this for him. So that's kind of an odd part of the plot for me. When I was watching this, I started to feel a bit sad that basically the entirety of Kafius' plot is being moved along by purely Sun's ability to fight, and it made me feel like she wasn't getting the credit she needs in her own life. I'm sure I'm meant to feel this way because she's only seen as being amazing when she's seen as being a spirit or something like external. But if she's in her own life, she's being seen as just a someone that, I don't know, the skinny bitch who can't fight, and then she needs to show people that she can. She's judged a lot in her own life. She's not really given the power she deserves. She isn't able to always grasp it because she's stuck in a family business where there's been a lot of, I'm sure, emotional abuse going on in her whole life. But I guess to a certain extent, Ariana, are you able to extend the difference between Kafius and Sun, or does the trouble arising in her life make it difficult to watch his plot?
Well, his life kind of sucks right now too. So
I'll give you this much: I wouldn't want to be either of them right now, at all. But then in reference to his end of his plot here, he seems like he's going to be doing more work. Do you have any speculation for what may be going on soon, Caitlin? What's going to be next for his Jean-Claude moves?
I mean, I'm expecting them to be making him do some drug runs or something like that. That's what I would expect.
Right, and then we also had this backstory too going on where his mother was fighting off the people that were coming to take away Kafius, and the look in her eyes is what sold the men in not doing it because they didn't want to lose their lives. They knew at least one of them would be taken down. That seems like a pretty strong thing to have behind you to build up your psyche. I'm sure that as much as Kafius has helped his mother out, that she is his strength, it seems, because she's the one that's given him these strong morals of holding what's yours to the end of all ends. I find that pretty inspiring personally, because I think anyone can relate to the fact that Kafius is someone who needs that strength in really tough times. And sometimes it needs to come from a spirit even. He doesn't know really how to get through some stuff, but he always goes through in a smile. Mai, how did that flashback affect you?
I always worry about him, like in every scene, even though I know how it's gonna turn out, obviously, because I'm a super fan. But the idea of a group of guys turning up at the door of a single woman with knives, that's a feeling.
Yeah, it's disturbing. Seeing that scene makes me really scared for her because I know how it's going to end, but I'm always like, oh my god, this is like terrifying beyond belief.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
And my other question then for the newbies is, what's going to happen when in the future Caphias is still calling upon Sun and she's like, you know, sleeping or just doesn't want to do it again and he really needs her? This reliance on her is going to have to become a problem. It already is in this episode. He got through, but just barely. Adiana, do you see that as being something that's going to happen again? Or do you think that she's going to learn that she needs to kind of protect him now?
I mean, I didn't really expect her to do it again. So I guess that's going to cause a lot of problems. Like, after it didn't work this time, I didn't anticipate him expecting it to work the next time. I don't know.
I have a question for you, Mitch.
I have an answer.
Good. Did you catch how old Caphias was in that story?
Should I have?
Maybe you should have.
I mean, I could guess like 7, but was there an age given?
Was he 8?
Ooh, the movie has it.
That's great.
10 points to Slytherin.
I have to say no comment there, but thank you for actually putting that out, because that's interesting. I wonder. Well, good on Caphias for getting through and doing what he needed to do. I wouldn't have been as brave to throw that brick behind the window and then run through the streets. I'm always very much in admiration of our dear Caphias. Before we move on from everything Caphias, I wanted to give you, Caitlin, one last opportunity to talk about your love for Cinnamon Roll.
I mean, he's precious, and I like him, and I found it amazing the way he's able to get Sun to open up when she won't open up to anyone, and he just kind of is just kind of insistently there, and I like the idea when he says to her, like, it seems like something is calling to me, and then just talks to her, and then that just gets her to open up. He's so warm and sweet and lovely and such a cinnamon roll. Protect at all costs.
I love him.
Caitlin, I wanted to ask how you thought about their conversation about Sun's mother, about if she breaks her promise, then her last words would be a lie.
I mean, I think the content of that is bullshit. I mean, my thought on Sun going to prison for that is she's not protecting anyone. She's only enabling them by making it worse, by allowing them to continue. So she'd really be protecting them by actually forcing her brother to face the consequences of what he's doing. So I didn't think it was particularly good advice, but it was advice nonetheless.
Yeah, I get where he's coming from, but I agree with you.
Yeah, it's tough to feel like I could ever understand the gravity of where Sun is, because she's in such an extreme situation and she has dealt with a lot of emotional abuse throughout her life. Her father has plainly taken a favorite in, I think, June Keyes, the brother's name. And that's bound to make enough issues, but it's also to the point where it's more than just favoritism. It's also, you're not good enough because you're a woman. You can't handle the business because you're a woman. And she doesn't take that lying down all the time, because how she takes it out, unfortunately, is at other humans in the boxing ring. Maybe fortunately, that guy seemed like he deserved it in the Smart Money's in the Skinny Bitch episode. But she's not able to get it out in her normal life, and that aggression, that's tough. It's tough to feel like you have to get out your aggression in other ways because you can't get it out in the scenarios where you need it to. So go ahead.
I was surprised she has a dog. She just doesn't strike me as a dog person. Because, I don't know, she strikes me more if she was going to have an animal as a cat person. So I was surprised that she had a dog.
Why?
You say that. Was that dog a Shiba Inu breed? It looks like it was a mix between a Shiba Inu and some other type of dog breed, if I had a guess.
Why would she have a cat?
Well, cats tend to be more independent, and she's probably gone like 14 hours a day, and dogs want attention and open affection all the time, and that seems to be the last thing she's interested in doing. So
maybe that's the only place she gets it.
It could be.
Well, the point I was going to make there is that I know a friend of mine bought a new puppy because they understood them as being the most cat-like dogs. So I find it funny that you would say that, Caitlin, because if it is somewhat of a Shiba Inu, as it looked to me at least, then it could have been, yeah, that you're right, that she wanted that kind of like companionship when she's there, but the independence when she's not of the animal. So, huh, I didn't really fully think about it that way, but you just opened up my mind to another part of the show. Another layer. The dog never fazed me until now. And yeah, she has to give out the dog in the end, so it seems like Sun in the end is making a decision. And
that was like my most emotional part of the episode, because the dog like whimpers when she's petting it, and I went, no!
Yeah. Super sad. Goodbye, puppy. So is that it then, newbies? Did she make her decision here?
I mean, it looks like it. She can't take care of a dog in prison, so she's got to give it to somebody she trusts.
Yeah. Did the sensei character strike you guys as anything in particular? Did you like him, Adriana?
Yeah.
He had some good vibes going on. I thought he was pretty cool in this episode, and I liked how he was basically like, you need to concentrate and get your work done. And I can imagine how she's grown into being such a tough fighter, because the determination of being able to do that balancing act, even with the water cup on her arm, seems pretty intense. I'm not very good at balance, let alone when someone adds more weights to anything. It sounds like a lot. So I'm envious of her ability to have the strength to get through the very tough emotional and physical things that she does. She's kind of my hero. I get really emotional watching a lot of Sun's plots, especially when she's fighting, because I find it to be so emotionally driven. And it's tough for me to not just see it as almost like a sort of therapy when she's kicking the crap out of someone.
That's so interesting, because I find myself highly detached from her. Just because she is so reserved, I can't make a personal connection to her.
Right. Hmm. I can see that too. I think I came in predisposed to loving her for the fact that when I watched Atla, Avatar The Last Airbender, I used to also get really emotional. I think it's just the form of fighting that makes me feel emotional, because I think perhaps it's the way it's meant to be. I think it's always going to be driven by like your chakra and your chi and how you're going to flow through the motion. And that always seems really guttural to me. So maybe that's where my love from her stemmed off of, from Avatar The Last Airbender, I suppose. So there's a rewatchable connection for the day. If you haven't learned by now, you definitely need to watch that episode, or watch that series with us, because no, we reference it for good reason. It was very building for a lot of what we're doing here. And then I want to talk about my favorite. This is my top tier character, Nomi. Nomi is super lovey-dovey with Amanita, and she's very nervous that the doctor could be telling the truth. And when she's having this conversation with Amanita, she has a very real moment with Amanita where Neets goes, well, he could be telling the truth, you could be dying soon, or he could be lying and basically fuck the police, here we go. And I was like, go with that one. So that's pretty exciting that they have this going on, I think, that they're like, you know what, fuck everyone, we're not going to have you lobotomize.
Wait, you thought that was good? This made me actually a little bit angry at Amanita. Because Nomi's telling her, she's like, hey, I'm having all these hallucinations. And the doctor says there's something wrong with my brain. Do you think that's true? And she's like, well, if it is true, you're probably going to die. So let's just say that the hallucinations are real. Like, that's just, I feel like I understand why they don't trust that doctor. And I don't trust him either, because he's got a creepy vibe. But like, maybe you should go to another doctor. Because, like, I understand that we know it's okay because it's a show, but they don't know they're in the show. And if you're having hallucinations, that's usually bad. It's like Izzy's brain tumor. Like, haven't they watched Grey's Anatomy?
Oh, no. Oh, the feels.
Ghost
brought me
sex.
Back with that one. Ghost sex, indeed. Oh, my God. Woof. Yeah.
That was the
seriously.
Season.
Seriously, though, you're bringing up an amazing point, Adriana. Why didn't you just go to another doctor at this point? You know what? She's probably afraid to get locked up again. So, I mean, maybe she has, like, another doctor she can go to that is, like, more LGBTQ friendly and that would not lock her up. It would actually call her by the proper pronoun
exactly.
and name.
They live in San Francisco. They have the access to the internet. Like, you could definitely find a trans-friendly doctor. This is just bad advice, I think.
I see it as very, like, devil may care because their love feels like that to me, that they're like, I kissed you, I loved you, I knew I was going to be with you forever. Isn't this the episode with the line, impossibility is changed with a kiss? That's paraphrased. I know that's not the exact line, but they seem like they run with the wind. They're a bit Pocahontas-y here. They're just cool. Let's float through it. We'll find our way through it because we're in love. And that's what I kind of love about them because that's a lot of how I am. I just tend to just flow with everything, especially when I'm in love. So maybe that's where I'm a bit blind to the actual facts of like, oh, this could be a major health concern. Maybe she should be with another doctor.
I mean, think of if someone you cared about said, I'm having hallucinations and I can talk to other people and like feel what they're feeling. You wouldn't be like, oh, that's cool. You'd be like, let's go maybe see a doctor. Like, that doesn't sound normal.
Yeah, it's a very blind trust too. They must have a deeper relationship than I'm able to understand, or Amanita must just feel like she's able to take care of her, know me no matter what, and that can't be true for everything medical. So that's a large oversight on Amanita's part. Yeah, perhaps it would have been best to get some medical attention at this point. But maybe it wouldn't have been because they have to kind of hide underground. They meet someone named Disney, which I don't know why their name is Disney, but I love it because, like, if I had to choose another name, I would choose Disney too. Whatever, that's fun. And this Disney person, I think that they were the person that was friends with the nurse that helped Neet's call Nomi, if I'm tracking the characters correctly, tells them, like, yeah, there's someone in your alleyway driving back and forth, an unmarked car, don't go home. And then they decide to take a back entrance, as far as I understand. This part I get kind of lost in the plot. Maybe you can help me. How did they decide to go home? They were just all of a sudden home and it was wrecked. And I was like, oh, I thought we weren't supposed to be here right now.
Yeah, they used the back entrance.
Okay, so that was it. It was just they needed to go in through the back entrance. Well, apparently.
Yeah, the owner of the apartment gave them keys or something, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I don't know. It's a bit weird also that they would go into the apartment that was, I guess, being watched to me. It feels like that's the last place I'd want to be right now. I guess you want your home comforts and whatnot, but this seems life or death, so.
Well, that's
maybe don't.
Where their stuff is.
Yeah, and to see it all trashed like that, I don't know. Do you think they're going to stay there, Caitlin, after they saw the state of their apartment?
I mean, I would more expect them to go just, like, pack a bag or something and get out.
Yeah. I can't imagine what I would do in this scenario. They're braver than me already.
It also is kind of a checkmark in the column, Doctor did lie.
Yes, for sure. Like, it's definitely clear this guy is sketchy, and they're getting more and more evidence that it's not just a normal medical issue that she has. Like, something else is going on. There's more of a conspiracy going on, clearly.
Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly.
So my question then, once again, for newbies, is now that we see this being proven as being more of a conspiracy from the trash department, especially in the unmarked car watching then, where does Jonas fit into this? Is he good? Is he bad? Why was he trying to save Nomi? What motives does he have? Does this make anything clearer for you two?
Still seems to be about where I was before the episode, which is the doctor's working with that Whispers guy and Jonas is on like opposing sides to him. That's about all I've worked out.
Yeah, because Jonas is an interesting character at this point in the story because we see him as being both good and evil in his actions or in his interpretations. They're pretty quick to mark him as being a terrorist, which feels like a bit of a conspiracy and very much a racial profiling. And I think that's purposeful. I think that the show is trying to show people alienating him to a certain degree. Not sure if he's a terrorist or not, but it felt like a quick jump to go to. And it's the fact that the fact of the matter is it's Jonas seems out of play right now. So we have to try and take his word for what it was when it was there or not. Like, we have to decide each episode if what Jonas is trying to do is good or bad. And if he's trying to help our sensates or not, it's very tough to tell. The show is not going to make it very clear in this episode. So, or any of the ones that we've seen. So it's definitely something to continue interpreting as we go on.
I mean, if Jonas really wanted to be helpful, he could stop being so cryptic all the time and could just, like he sort of did in the last episode, and he started giving some answers. Like, he could have just done that from the start. So, I don't know. Like, I think we're supposed to trust him for the most part, but the dramatic mechanisms of making him cryptic is really obnoxious. Like, if you want to be helpful, just be helpful.
Yeah, it's like the trope of characters not having conversations or saying what they need to being the cause of the drama. Starts to feel like that with him, doesn't it? So Jonas aside, we then go into Wolfgang's plot. He is visiting his uncle, who is mad because he thinks Wolfgang stole some diamonds that the uncle's son was supposed to steal. So there's a bit of a family rivalry going on here, and this may be a bit of a continuation of what was going on at the funeral. If you remember, there was a man with tattoos that I think was bald that had kind of given Wolfgang an eye in the pilot. Ma, you'll have to remind me. You'll have to remind me if this is, I think that's supposed to be the same character that we're referencing here, right? That's Wolfgang's cousin that was supposed to steal the diamonds.
Yeah.
So there's that going on, and Wolfgang doesn't really care because he's so just cocky. He doesn't stand out to anyone, and it's very attractive to me in a person when you can just be so strong. My God, he exudes everything about human beings that I wish I could be, but I could never, because he is kind of like I was saying about Copius, even the strength that you can't really teach, even. You kind of just have that. He's a very strong character. But I think I remember either Adiana, Caitlin, or both saying that you don't like Wolfgang. So Adiana, I'll start off with you. How do you feel in his cockiness in this scene toward his uncle?
I have no opinion on him. It's Caitlin who doesn't like him.
So Caitlin, how is it then? How do you feel about Wolfgang and his rivalry going on with his cousin here and all of that?
I don't actively dislike him. I have no opinion towards him because, like Sun, I feel like he's pretty absent of personality. So I was kind of surprised to hear you say you find him very full of personality, because I think I find him very blank and empty, and just, I don't find him interesting in the least. So I kind of just don't care. Whenever his scenes come on, I kind of zone out a little bit.
Right. And it's tough to talk from the perspective of how I felt while I was watching this episode, but I remember feeling like this was one of my selling points in Wolfgang, this episode and this scene in particular. Like, oh, he's cool in my books because he knows how to stand up to authority. So join the revolution, I guess.
I just don't find him interesting in any way.
I like that he sings. That's pretty fun. Maya, he's your favorite of all time.
Yeah, he is. I don't get it.
I don't get why you like him.
Because he's interesting.
How?
Because you don't know everything about him from the first moment you see him.
You don't know anything about him at all.
You know he had a shitty childhood. You know he likes singing. He likes talent shows. He has a best friend.
Those are very minor side traits of a personality. That's not a personality. That's a note you make in the side of a character outline.
Well, he's very determined and he's brave and he's stubborn. Those are personality traits.
He feels like a block of lead to me.
He's hard on the outside and he's mushy on the inside.
Is
like
he?
Like a Lindt chocolate. That's how I would describe him.
He does have great chemistry with that girl. I agree with Caitlin in that most of the time when he's on, I don't really notice what he's doing or what's going on. But he does have really great chemistry with that girl. What's her name? Kala.
Kala.
Yeah. Because you can just like feel the friction and they're not even like in the same scene. Like all they do is stare at each other. So that was some good casting.
For real, yeah. You're speaking everything. You always do this. You always speak everything better than I can in a much quicker fashion. God, like, I wish I had like half of your smarts sometimes, Adriana. You should be hosting now.
It's like daring to steal from under his own family. Like, yeah, that takes some guts.
Maybe that's where I must feel the strength then, also from what I've said before, but from the chemistry. I think he's a character that can have really extreme chemistry, like an actor even. Even with Felix, it's like the look in his eyes is very intense, and you fall kind of into them.
Caitlin, don't you even wonder why he did it?
Did what?
Steal the diamonds that his cousin was casing and was such a big deal to the family.
Because like, he's got daddy issues. That's what I assumed.
Well, I suppose we're going to have to see how Wolfgang deals with this.
Well, who on the show doesn't have daddy issues?
Exactly, so there's nothing remotely interesting about that for him. Because everybody has them. I don't like your favorite character.
At least we have Caffius.
This is probably the equivalent of not liking Angel back in Buffy. That you're not
He's
liking
not
her wolf
Spike, tank. Though. Like,
I don't actively dislike him. I just find him like a blank blah every time he's on the screen. So I just don't find him. So I don't dislike him. I just don't have opinions other than boredom towards him.
Like Natalie said, he's not boring. He's German.
I find him very boring. Sorry.
I love and adore him. Let's move on.
So let's talk about this interesting bathroom sequence where Wolfgang is with Felix at the bar and Felix is talking loudly about diamonds. Wolfgang shuts him up really quick and he's like, I have to go to the bathroom. And as he's urinating, he hears a woman in the bathroom of the bar, as he thinks. But it's really Kala, and she's in her personal bathroom, which I thought was kind of like, I don't know, a bit of a cute meet in a way, because it's like, oh, we're both in our bathrooms, but just on like different areas of the world. So, but we're still like together here in the same spot, kind of. It felt like some strange synergy and some weird chemistry, once again, that you can't really describe all the way. Even just like the writing of the scene to have them be so natural about it. Because he's like, what are you doing in here? And she's like, you must have come up from the restaurant. And then they're all speaking like English, German. And it's just, how are they understanding each other? It's kind of a thing. I don't know. I think some super fans are a lot more complacent in feeling that they can just magically understand the languages. For me, it gets confusing because what language are they physically speaking? Like, this is like a Doctor Who thing. Like, okay. I don't know what's going on here.
Mitch, they're speaking their native languages all the time, but they're speaking English so that we understand it. And when they switch,
I have a real issue with this. And
yeah,
can I? Okay,
yeah, you go.
Really, it really bothers me that they expect us to be patient enough to go through this boring ass pacing where we're on episode, what is this, 4 or 5?
5.
And like nothing has happened. But they expect us to be patient enough to sit through that. But we're not patient enough to be able to sit through subtitles. It just really, really takes me out of every scene. Especially, like for me, especially like the Mexico scenes, because I'm just like sitting there and I'm like, but that's not how people talk. Like people don't, like even... like the artist religion line, even just some of like their slang, it really bothers me. And I just don't understand. Like, I think it just makes it so, like, I don't know. Like, I think that I just have like a lot of issues with this show in terms of like logistics. And it really bothers me that they're trying to make like this grand universal show, or so they think, but it's just, I think through a very Americanized lens, and that really bothers me. Why can't they just speak in their own language? But that's the end of my soapbox. Go on, my.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's very Americanized.
I've never let go of that this whole entire show, Ariana, and it's always been my main issue as well. I think that it's okay for some super fans to feel the way they need to feel about this, because they may have a different experience with Americanized culture, and then that's fine for them. For me, it doesn't feel fine. It feels like a bastardization of everything. And while I wouldn't know slang from different countries because I am American and I speak English, I feel the difference. Like, I can feel the fact that it's weird for them to sometimes say a word or a statement in their native language and then switch back to English, but they're talking to each other. It's foreign. It's and I don't mean foreign in terms of foreign language. I mean, it's foreign in terms of how humans interact. That's not how life really would go about. If you're with the people that speak the same language as you, that's what you should be shown as speaking, if that's what you're really doing. It feels like a bit of an insult to the cultures to not fully show their culture. I don't always see the full decision there, but when the creators then decided to make this mostly an English-speaking show. I think, yes, we should all have the patience to read subtitles in a multicultural, globe-spanning show. It's never been excusable for me, honestly. And I wish that there was anything more I could say on it that was like redeeming for it, because the show does do a lot for me in a lot of other ways. But this has really just been something that's irked me from pretty much day one. I was like, wait, they're in Korea. Why are they speaking English? That just, no, like, it's just weird. I don't know.
I get why they do it. I just don't really enjoy it that much.
Yeah, it's I'd say one of the rougher points of the show, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's to reach the most people, you know.
It is.
Even the lazy ones who don't want to do subtitles.
As a firm lover of Call Me By Your Name, I can say that I would have preferred even for them to speak Italian the whole movie, because there's a certain passion in seeing. Like, that's a large thing, actually, with within the culture of people that watch anime, that often people like to watch the original voice actors speaking Japanese and reading the English subtitles if they're an English speaker, because that makes it still feel like it has the same emotion behind it. And that's where I think the show would have benefited, if it kind of took that anime fandom's thought process.
Well, like, even K-dramas are so popular right now, and most of the people who watch them aren't Korean. And, or even like a show like Queen of the South, which I hate, but like, it takes place in Texas, like half in Texas, half in Mexico. And that's like it's just a show on TV, and they switch back and forth. And it's just like a guns show that is for guys to watch people with guns and drugs. So, I don't know. I think they need to give the audience more credit. And sometimes I think they give us too much credit, like in expecting like, here's my other issue with this show, is that they had their grand plan of doing 5 seasons, and I feel like this is very Joss Whedon of them. So they, like, mapped it out, but I kind of feel like so far, like, everything that's happened in these 5 episodes, I still feel like this could have been condensed into, like, the first half hour of the pilot. Like, yes. It's just moving so slowly for me, and I can't.
I agree. It's very slow, and a lot of it feels unnecessarily slow.
Totally valid. Really, it's a show much like Buffy, I felt in the beginning, where you have to stick through some of the schlock in the slowness and, like, why is this happening? This is silly. Until you get to the part where, okay, now we're into the mythos and now we're serious and we're not going to waste time in any more fluff. And if there is fluff, it still has a purpose. It's not just to be there, which some of the stuff in this episode especially does feel like. This is a tough episode. I, like, even looking back on it, reading the show notes that you wrote, Adriana, I was like, you did the best job you could in finding any important events going on in this episode, because there was not a lot. yeah, I think that Smart Money's on the Skinny Bitch was a treat for anyone that's been patient enough to watch up to that point, and this is a bit of a letdown. And I wish there were more episodes in the beginning, like Smart Money's on the Skinny Bitch, because that, I thought, was more... It's more representative of the entirety of the show in my memory. It's more, it feels more of the pace. So I'm hoping that as we go into later episodes that newbies start to feel more in touch with what's going on, like it matters, and like you should care about it, because you're not alone in feeling the ways you are here. I, at this point, was, I think, watching mainly for Sun, because I liked that episode so much, and I liked seeing her kick ass so much that I couldn't wait to see it again. That's why I kept watching. I remember specifically. So, and then this whole thing goes on with Kala's wedding too, which is interesting. So, if we're all comfortable moving on from that discussion, does anyone else have anything to say about the bastardization of culture here and the lack of subtitles while speaking normal languages that you should be?
The only other point I really have is that the characters are picking up on that they know the other language that the other person is speaking.
Mm-hmm. So are you talking in more of the fact that we learn more about the science, the mythos?
Just in general, that they understand what they're saying, but they also recognize that this isn't the language I would know.
Well, that's kind of back to the question that I had for even you, Mai, then, as a super fan, what's going on in the fact that, like, anyone is speaking the opposite language of their own? Like, that part doesn't track with me. Because I don't know...
I just figured that that's like the sharing ability, like a leftover from when they connect.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lag.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I suppose it won't get any easier to understand in terms of language. So, unfortunately, obviously, since I'm still confused about it as a super fan, take it or leave it, I suppose. Yeah, we'll have to leave it aside for now, but I wanted to go into then the whole part about the wedding leading up to it. I love the sweet moment that Kala has where her father makes her that very delicious-looking dessert. Mm. And then Nomi imagines that she's drinking, like, a more sugary coffee. That was kind of cute. But they're, like, tasting the same things. That was fun for me.
Speaking of cinnamon rolls, there's Kala's dad.
I was about to say, he's so nice.
He's so cute.
He's the sweetest.
I have his little mustache. He's pretty great, and I like the family interactions that we get to see here. It feels like we get to learn more about Kala. I think Brittany was the one that I remember really liking Kala as a newbie, so I'm curious to see how she feels after this episode especially. But we see her kind of like having conversations with her auntie about what sex is and how to do it. And she's like, we have the internet, which mm-hmm. it kind of struck me as a bit of a duh moment because the way everyone was talking about it, or even the auntie there, I was like, oh, okay. So yeah, Kala really needs to learn more about this. This is a very traditional culture where that wouldn't be talked about. But then I was like, no, we're in the current day and age. Yeah. There's the internet for a reason. So
Kala's in for porn.
Kala's in a bit of a generational gap here. We're seeing because it's maybe like any of us, we feel sometimes that those of a generation above us or two wouldn't exactly understand the knowledge we have access to. So I found that to be kind of an interesting point and kind of just cute. It was, I can imagine that going on in any culture, honestly. But it makes sense that we saw it in Kala's because it seems like everyone's being very hush hush about anything real. Honestly, it feels to me that, they're holding back from the ideas of speak how you really feel about Rajan because she doesn't. Maybe she's just feeling pressure into it. It starts to feel like a set marriage as opposed to a loved one. And that's the discussion we're having here then. Is this anything of a love marriage, newbies? Do you think that she should go through with this? What's going on here at this point?
First of all, Kala's scenes give me anxiety more than anyone else. Like, I feel like sick watching them. But,
really?
But it's all of her own. Like, I feel really bad insinuating this is her family's fault because I feel like they've been nothing but supportive, especially when this would be, like, not considered a traditional marriage. I feel like this is of her own doing. If she doesn't want to marry him, just say so. It's supposedly a love match, so she picked him. So why'd you pick him if you don't like him? I don't know. I think that's why it just makes me feel like icky because I feel like she's doing this to herself.
Well, yeah, and then I'm wondering then if it isn't the expectation of finding like a suitable person to be married to through traditional marriage that is giving her the pressure where she feels she has to say yes. Maybe this is like in her mind, the next natural step from traditional marriage to have like a sort of arranged marriage to the point where it's, yeah, you had the decision, but you still feel like you didn't because it was too good of an opportunity to pass up. So you have to pretend like it's love for everyone else's sake, but not for your own.
It's just too bad because it doesn't. Her family is not pressuring her in any way. Like,
yeah,
you need to do this. Isn't it so great that he's so rich? They're not doing that to her. Like, they're going along with the assumption that she's in love with this guy, and she's not really doing anything to dissuade it, even though we know she feels that way. So I agree with Ariana. There's definitely a level of discomfort in watching that.
Yeah, Caitlin, I know you often talk about secondhand embarrassment and what you feel it during Lito's. Is that what you would say you feel during Kala's as well?
No, not really embarrassment. Just kind of, girl, you need to get your shit together.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough scenario to see, as a lot of these are. We're seeing every single character in a really like tumultuous period of their life, mostly, I'd say. And it's something I couldn't imagine being in because I'm not of this culture. And that's the toughest part for me, that I feel nothing but sympathy for Kala because while I don't get the full backstory of her family and her relationship to Rajan and why she's deciding to do this in her culture, it still feels like something that I can relate to from the point of, I think we've all been kind of pressured into do some things by our family at one point or time in our life, but never anything as hopefully as large as getting married. And even if she's not feeling that pressure, it could just be from culture. And once again, I'm sure we've all felt to some degree that we've had our cultures define something for us that we didn't care to do. So, I like to say that in terms of that type of plot, that Sense8 tries its best to relate to as wide of an audience as possible by showing things that they hope will translate well to the world. I like to assume that this is more than just an Americanized show and that people around the world would watch it. I'm not sure. I'm not really sure how the fandom runs there. Because I don't know if it's an offensive thing, even the show could be to people who outside of America are like, why are they Americanizing all of these cultures? This makes no sense. So it almost feels tough to comment on the stuff with Kala because I don't want to say anything more than I don't know because I'm only seeing the Americanized version of everything here in this TV show. So it's a whole scenario, I suppose. And then going into the wedding itself, we have the steps of the marriage that are being done to be sort of like their vows, it seems. And during this, we're having flashes to other characters, and we're having a lot of Wolfgang's ass as he's swimming. And I know you're a big fan of Wolfgang's ass in particular, Mai, if you're just saying as much. So,
In this particular scene, I gotta give first prize to his back muscles.
His back muscles, okay. Fair enough. Yes, everyone on the show, I'll say it again, is really just like built like a bodybuilder. It's kind of amazing. I mean, it's Hollywood, so.
They're a very attractive bunch.
Yeah. So that's a thing, like... Everybody is just extremely fit, and Wolfgang is here to show off his body because he's at a pool where everyone is nude. I assume that's a thing. I don't know. I've never seen it in my life. Has anyone else?
I thought it was very bizarre. I find, am I just weird? Do people often swim in the nude, like athletically? Not like, oh, for funsies to go skinny dipping, but like athletically? I think that would... Wouldn't some stuff like get in the way? I don't know. I would find it uncomfortable to be trying to do, you know, like laps in the nude. Like there's a reason why people wear swimsuits.
There's a compression factor.
Yeah.
Whatever aerodynamic is, but for water, hydrodynamic, I'm sure. I think it was just for enjoyment, but I don't know if in Germany this is just a thing, because it seems like from the background characters or the extras that everyone of any age would have been there. It wasn't just like it wasn't like a sexy thing, you know? It was really just there to be like, everybody join in the nude. So.
And no one reacted like, why are you naked?
Yeah. Which is in stark contrast to how Kala's going to react when she witnesses the dong that was heard around the world. I like to reference it as it's just there, and it's not that the camera lingers, but your mind almost does because of the way it's shot. It's so specific. It's just framed right to have it as Kala's eyes would have been as her eyes grow wide. Mai, we reached it. Tell us your feelings. How are you?
I'm fine.
Okay, I'm just giggly because I'm like almost embarrassed to talk about it, but this is the show, so yeah. Wolfgang's penis is shown on screen. That I feel that's also a revolutionary thing because maybe Adriana, you would have any insight into this being in the filmmaking world, television making world. Is it usually that there are body doubles, there are stunt doubles for nude scenes of any type of gender's nudity?
Well, usually when they show those appendages, they are not real. Those are usually a prosthetic. I mean, they might not be, but usually they are.
Right. I don't know if this was or was not. It seemed real to me, and I think that gives the effect it needs to then. Huh. It's not the nudity itself that I find so interesting. It's the way that everyone reacts to it, that they faint. Because is nudity something that needs to be fainted at, is my question. I don't know. It's a pretty shocking moment for Kala, I'm sure. And then Wolfgang can't help but faint along with her, I think was the thing. Is anyone concerned for him in this pool? He just fainted into the water.
I completely forgot that he passed out too. See, I lose everything that he's in.
Oh no.
Yeah, maybe that's why you don't like him, because you don't pay attention to him.
I don't, well, I pay attention, but
yeah, I know,
boring. Maybe he should be more interesting. And I'm sorry the dong did nothing for me because I don't find him interesting, so why would I find his dick interesting?
Yeah. I think I find it more interesting that it would be in a Netflix serialized drama, if that's the proper term.
Hmm.
But Netflix does like to push the agenda, the everything, it seems, which, hey, go ahead. You have your adult platform. It's almost like an HBO to a certain extent of this day and age, it feels at times. So I think that's where they felt the leniency to go this way, to fully show the nudity, to fully give you the effects that Kala was feeling in the scene.
You know Netflix, both a shower and a grower.
I'm just not going to comment on that, but I think are seeing this feels like a what's going on pun, but a bit of a revolution here because this was, I think, one of the first Netflix original shows.
Yeah.
So this must have been something of a bit of a show of what Netflix was willing to do and show in their shows, what level they were willing to reach. And it may have defined them as a platform for some people. Some may have been offended. Some may have been really pleased, like saying, oh, this is cool. They're being very lax about nudity now. Cool. We're here for it. So does anyone fall any way strongly? Does this come as a shock as a Netflix show to anyone? Or does this just feel like, okay, whatever, it's a human body?
I forgot we were getting the full picture.
Oh, so it came as a shock to you even as a super fan?
Not a shock, but like, oh, okay. And then, yeah.
Adriana, do you feel any particular way about there being nudity within television shows on Netflix?
No. I mean, I do think that I feel like this show in particular kind of like overdoes it in some ways, like needlessly, and like almost like gratuitously, like, look what we can do because we're not on real TV, or we're like, you know what I mean? Like, we're like on, like, kind of like how Game of Thrones does that too. But whatever, it doesn't like offend me. I just think it's not like artistically good. But like, this scene was fine. It served the narrative.
Yeah, I'm obviously very with you on the gratuitous part, because that's one of the first things I say when I introduce this show to anyone. I'm like, yeah, just be ready for a lot. Like, everything you can imagine you're going to find in this show, from gore to sex to nudity to language, everything. It's going to just be more than it should often at times. But I agree with you, Adriana. Yeah, this one does serve the narrative, which is all fine and good as far as it runs. Caitlin, I remember when we were introducing the show that you were saying that you don't really care to see people having sex on television, but I assume then that nudity may be different to you, that it's more of what art is like religion is the name of our episode. So is this just more artistic, or how do you feel about this sequence having happened?
I mean, like I said earlier, it did nothing for me. Like, I think, like Adriana, it's gratuitous, so it's not particularly artistic. It's just kind of gratuitous, but so you, it's there.
You don't feel like Wolfgang being naked served the purpose?
I mean, him being naked's fine, but I think we got the point when he was walking up and we saw his ass. Like, we knew exactly what she would be looking at. Like, it just sort of felt like, let's do it because we can.
Yeah. It does. All right. So we didn't really talk about Leto's movie sequence. He is attempting to do a sequence with actress where she's walking down the stairs. He's meant to look kind of up at her in like a revered manner, or like, oh my God, she's sexy. And then he starts crying during that, kind of leading up to his sequence in the car. And then after that, we see him in a gratuitous fake blood scene. Like, they introduce it as fake blood, but it still felt real-ish when he's doing this whole thing on his line where he's being pulled through the sequence of shooting everyone. I thought that that was somewhat unique in a way. I don't know if I've really seen a show be able to spend as much money as it has on showing the intensity behind filming all of that and making it look like it was intentionally filmed. I don't know how else to describe that. It felt like a very high budget scene is what I should say. Does anyone feel anything about the movie scenes that Leto is filming here?
I was half expecting there to be a twist that, oops, he had a real gun on accident for some reason.
Right. When he shoots the blank at the end, right?
No, like through the entire thing and like,
oh no,
they're going to finish and everyone's, oops, actually dead. It's just waiting for a twist like that.
I thought that as well, because I thought that there was some kind of purpose for why we were seeing this.
No, there wasn't.
No, it turns out, no.
Just showing day in life kind of stuff. All right. So that, as far as I understand, is the end of the episode. I hope I gave everything justice, because as much as we say nothing happened, still there are just so many little things going on. So speak now, forever hold your peace, gang. Moving on to our favorite scenes and our favorite lines. Go ahead, Mai.
I wanted to talk a little bit more about the wedding, unless it's in the favorites.
No. I think it's a fair discussion. Go right ahead.
The significance of Sun switching places with Kala when she's on the chair, because that's probably the moment, like, when Sun decides she's gonna, like, give up her dog and, like, take the fall, probably.
Yeah. I did, so, like, go ahead.
Is that saying sort of Kala equating this wedding as a prison statement? Or, like, feeling trapped? Because that's how I see Wolfgang being naked, because he's, you know,
free, in a way.
Free as the day he was born, literally. And Kala.
Yes.
Heavy with clothing, and it's all.
So yeah, that's another part. You bring up another point to what I was saying before about how I can feel and sense and taste, and it just there's a unique empathetic experience that I have when I'm watching the show that connects me to it. That I could feel the weight of the jewelry and everything she was wearing when she says that. So you're right that that was another significance that the wedding scene brought to us. I'd like to almost equate both of those characters to types of benders, as in Wolfgang is the waterbender and Kala is the firebender here. It only feels natural with the fire sequence shown then with the water sequence right next to each other. It was like, okay, I get it. They're fire and water, and here they go.
Yo, hot man.
Yes, Flamio indeed. And so our wedding will or will not continue. We'll see what goes on next week. We'll get to our guesses on what goes on in the next episode in just a bit. But then we're going to move on to our favorite lines. And I wanted to start off with you, Mai. Excuse me, favorite scenes. Go ahead with your favorite scene.
My favorite scene is Wolfgang stepping out of the pool and Carla's wide-eyed expression as she sees the equipment.
Yeah, that was obviously, as we just discussed, a thing. Adriana, what's your favorite scene?
I liked the scene of the mom with the knife with the guys coming. I liked that.
Yeah, I'm always there for the mama bear moments too.
Mm-hmm.
And Caitlin, what's your favorite scene?
Mine was every time Caffeus was a precious cinnamon roll when he would meet a new member of his cluster, and he was just not freaked out, just like excited and super into it and adorable.
He's like a tiny puppy.
He is. He's just so precious. And I just love how just cool he thinks it is. Everyone else is like, what's going on? He's like, great! This is so cool!
Good Bobby. My favorite scene is them both fainting. I like that a lot. I don't know. I relate. It's the most I'll say there, I guess. Yeah, on both spectrums, her and his faintings, I was like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, I feel like that's a bit of the lag again. Like,
I like that they feel it for each other. They faint for each other in a way.
Falling for each other.
Yeah, you could say in a way, I guess. as they're setting it up, I suppose. All right, and then our favorite lines, mine.
Leto in the car. I see you, villain. I see you with your fucking villain mustache. And yes, I put a gif in the doc.
That's cute. I appreciate the gif. I love him. Yeah, yeah. I'll have a line from that scene as well. But Adriana, what's your favorite line?
I'm paraphrasing here, but it was when Cepheus was talking about how the guys could have taken out their mother, but they knew that she would take at least one of them with her too, and none of them wanted to be that one.
100%. It's a very strong line. Yeah. And then Caitlin?
Mine was also Leto when he is connecting with Son, and he's like, there's a crying Korean woman, and she's like, I'm not crying, and he goes, there's a Korean woman standing next to me not crying the same way I'm not screaming.
I love him.
And then I'll go right into my Leto line. I had two. I couldn't choose just one, apparently. I like Leto's way of feeling like he's like so needy, and he's like, oh my god, give me attention now, because I can get like that, I know that. And when he's talking, and the script is literally written this way to have it like there's a pause because Hernando doesn't know how to react to Leto's freak out in the car when they're on the phone, and then he's like, Hernando, are you still there? And it's like, oh yeah, I can see how I can come off like that. But the other favorite line I have is, what the fuck are you doing? You're not in love with him, right before they faint. It's so like to the point, and it's like he knows her. And I'm like, wow, that was intense pretty quick, Wolfgang. You got that going for you. All right, and that wraps up our favorite scenes and favorite lines. If you want to get a hold of us, we have our email, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @re_watchable. Our Tumblr is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And we love your 5-star reviews on iTunes. This week, if you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, then Karen will help you through your period. Thanks, Karen. Then we have our listener feedback for this week. And I'd like to start us off with Mai taking our first tweet.
Our first tweet comes from Laura Morrow at LauraMorrow123. Oh my God, it's super hard to not keep watching. The What Going On musical thing was awesome, by the way. I love how finally the story is making sense and I'm getting so much better with names. Yay!
Yeah, there's a lot of people, huh, to keep track of in the show. I still sometimes get confused. Like, there's just so many side characters on top of the main 8, so good luck. and then Adriana, if you would take our last tweet.
Sure, this is from Jo Ludwigson. And she said, thank you for the Sutara week. It was truly great.
Caitlin, what was that for?
I don't know. Listen to the Avatar round and you'll know.
Oh, you'll know.
Yeah. It's the show's 10 years anniversary since it ended, I believe. So there's a bit of a vibe going around for Avatar The Last Airbender, if you want to jump on that hype train. And then we're going to go into our last section of the show this week called Adiata's Answers and Caitlin's Conjectures for Sense8 106 Demons. Go ahead, newbies.
Demons. I'm guessing that's going to be literal and figurative in some way. Probably something with Nomi and the demons in her head. And I don't know. I'm not expecting little creepy creatures to come flying out from the cracks in the earth, though. But that would be an interesting genre change that I might not be opposed to.
Let's see. Let's go through everyone. What will probably happen next week? Where did we leave off? Sun. Actually, things will probably happen with Sun. I'm guessing she turns herself in. Leto probably keeps filming his movie. Will probably keeps on with his problematic storyline. Kefius probably still dealing drugs on the down low. Riley probably still sad in her apartment. Nomi. Oh, they have to leave, so they probably have something to do. They have to leave their apartment. Probably still won't go to a doctor. Wolfgang will probably mope around with his friend. Kala, probably all we'll see of Kala next week is that she wakes up and we're like, oh, and by the way, she's married. That's probably what will happen next week.
I was so impressed that you knew everyone's names until I realized you were going in doc order. I was like, oh my God, I can't even list them off the top of my head.
No, I don't know any of their names.
All right, well, we're going to have to see if everyone's predictions come true for next week. And until then, I'm Mitch.
I'm Mai.
I'm Mariana.
And I'm Caitlin.
We'll see you next week for 106 Demons. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.